Thank you, Representative Buckley. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Today is Wednesday, February 17, 2016. I am opening a meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government, and I'm opening a work session on the Department of Administrative Services Information Technology Reorganization. Mr. Siebert.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the Department of Administrative Services is here to discuss their reorganization of information technology positions within the department. There's been some considerable changes, and they're also, I believe, going to mostly a discussion about the new vendor and procurement arrangement for information technology.
Thank you, Mr. Knott, and whoever else, Mr. Pettit, and whoever else is coming with you. Thank you.
Chair Santa Hayward, members of the committee, I'm George Naughton, Chief Financial Officer of the state and the Acting Director of the Department of Administrative Services. I'm actually going to just introduce the topic real quick, and I'm going to hand it over to Dr. Pettit and Debbie Dennis. Dr. Pettit, you know, he's the Chief Information Officer for the state, and Debbie Dennis, who will join up here in just a second, is the person who's in charge of procurement services, providing procurement services for a host of other agencies. We were asked to come back today and talk a little bit more, one of the components of our reorganization inside of IT, specifically on the proposal we had to improve vendor management, IT chain management, supply chain management, what we're trying to do. So we have a presentation for you. I'm going to slide back one row and let them talk with you about what they're doing.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Alex Pettit. I'm the Chief Information Officer for the state of Oregon, and I'm going to introduce the topic here today and then turn it over to Ms. Dennis to go through some specifics on it, and then I'll pick it up again there towards the back side of it. So as no surprise to any of you, I'm sure, there's a changing IT landscape out there. The existing service models lack flexibility. The state can't afford to own or maintain all of its own portfolio. A lot of fragmentation and duplications out there, and increasing sophistication of long-term IT vendor relationships is changing fundamentally how we go about doing business. It's not about bringing in a product and using it for 20 or 30 years and then moving on to another solution. The opportunities for us now are to bring in elastic IT capabilities. We're available as on-demand services. Market entry, low barriers to entry for new service lines, standard and master agreements, interoperability and purchasing power, procurement of shared services, and building capacity to manage our IT vendor community. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Dennis.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Debbie Dennis, State Procurement Services Manager, Department of Administrative Services. The next couple of slides that we have here are from our partners at Gartner. This particular slide has a quote about the importance of vendor management in the changing IT landscape and environment. Basically, what it covers is that, yes.
Senator Johnson.
In reading this, I was just thinking about its applicability in so many other instances where we end up, we as a state, being held in the thrall of a vendor because either we haven't refreshed the contracts. I mean, you're talking about very specifically newer cloud delivery models. I think that there's an applicability, and maybe I'm speaking not to this panel, but to Mr. Naughton right over your shoulder, the fact that I don't see us refreshing contracts all that often, and with computers, the risk of license problems, but also just falling into a rut. I don't know how often we refresh the state's banking relationships. I don't know how often we keep vendors on their toes, not only in their deliverables, but in their pricing models, by shaking up the vendor community from time to time. And that's not that I'm disparaging any current vendors. I'm just saying the market loves competition. And I think you keep everybody on their A game if there's some review of these vendor relationships, not just in the IT realm. And the fact that Mr. Naughton is nodding affirmatively, I'll probably sleep better tonight. So thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Dennis.
Thank you. So just on this particular quote, This is a demonstration of the importance of vendor management in the IT landscape, and it is actually very true that this model could be rolled out to other goods and services that the state procures. We're focusing on IT today and in the next couple of years because that is the large percentage of where the state is spending its money. The next slide we have here is a framework that demonstrates the sets of activities that are typical in a mature vendor management program. The first category of activities are around setting up a vendor management program, defining your metrics, looking at your current set of price agreements, creating a set of standards for IT goods and services, and laying across that the portfolio of price agreements that we have today, and then identifying where there are gaps. The next set of activities are around procuring price agreements and contracts to fit into those gaps. The next category is around managing vendor performance, managing those relationships, managing the contracts themselves. And then the final set of activities are really around measuring the performance of vendors and then making adjustments and communicating the results of your vendor management relationship. This slide here is the similar framework. It's actually the same thing, and we have color-coded it to demonstrate where the state is currently conducting these types of activities and where we are wanting to go. The colors, the categories that are in red would be new activities for the state of Oregon. We currently do not have a formal vendor management program established, and so all of the work in the first column would be new work for the state of Oregon. And then the back end work in that final column would also be new work.
Ms. Dennis, let me ask you a question before we get much further. One of the conversations that we've had in the subcommittee a lot, as Mr. Naughton will attest, over the past year or so, has been around how much of this kind of stuff, what services are DAS, is DAS doing for other agencies, and what are they doing for themselves? And my question in this context is this something that would apply across pretty much every agency to standardize it as part of, in essence, of the equivalent of the stage gate process for new IT projects, or is this something that would only apply to services that DAS specifically contracts for, or are you going to address this later in the conversation?
Would you like to address this question, Alex? Okay, very good. Madam Chair, members of the committee. To address that question, I would say that this is an effort to standardize across state agencies. The objective would be to identify goods and services and types of systems that are like, that where agencies have like needs, so that we could put in place standardized price agreements for those agencies to procure from.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, under House Bill 3099, procurement services were more procurement authority was brought to the Office of the State CIO. This is one of the things that was identified as areas where either work wasn't being, things weren't being addressed where we had identified, or where we felt things needed to be expanded to your point that they need to be standardized across agencies, and similar to the stage gate process, that's really what we're proposing here. And we've Ms. Dennis has framed this in a way to say what it is specifically that's not being done, what is being done only for DAS, or what and would be extended, and how they would be extended. So
thank you. I can't speak for the rest of my committee, but I think that's a good idea. Senator Whitsitt?
Thank you. That's kind of a busy slide, but what it says essentially, I think, is that we haven't established any standards, and we haven't established any performance measure evaluation in our IT system.
Madam Chair, Senator Whitsitt, thank you for the question. When it comes to what we call a technology reference model, it is specifically the articulation of the technology architecture, what we're proposing or what we'll be developing. And yes, that is a true statement. We haven't been prescriptive in how we have agencies procure, build, design their own systems for And this is a way, using procurement, to not be prescriptive of it, but to encourage them towards a bill, to say, well, if you'll buy this equipment, if you'll buy this configuration, we'll make it easier for you than having to do a one-off and come up with a unique or an agency-specific solution to something that's a common problem. And so we're trying to attract more bees with honey than we are with vinegar.
Thank you. So the two activity columns in the center are activities that the state is currently conducting today. The ones in blue we do on a very regular basis. We are conducting RFPs. We're evaluating our vendors. We're awarding contracts. We're managing the finances. The activities that are in yellow are also being conducted today, but those are being conducted on a project-by-project basis or an agency-by-agency basis. There isn't an enterprise look today at what is vendor performance, the same vendor that might be used in multiple agencies. What is that vendor's performance across the enterprise? What is that relationship like across the enterprise? So the proposal we're bringing forward today really addresses how can we do that better. This slide here is talking about the IT procurement workload that we have been able to evaluate based on ORPIN, our enterprise procurement system. Currently in DAS, we have 11 FTE dedicated to conducting various types of IT procurements. The first column demonstrates the work that we did in DAS Procurement Services for the benefit of DAS during the last biennium. So what this says is that we did 68 new IT contracts for DAS last biennium, and we did 502 other types of contract actions. Those could be purchase orders, amendments, work orders, other types of contract actions. The next column over is our IT price agreement portfolio. We currently have 103 IT price agreements available. Most of those, or a little over half of...
Time out. Yes. Can you define what an IT price agreement is, please? Because I want to make sure we're all speaking the same
Thank
language.
You. Thank
Certainly.
You.
I'm never afraid to ask the dumb question.
Sure, certainly. Co-Chair Steiner-Hayward, to address that question, we have included in this 103 all of the contracts that we have available today for software, hardware, servers, services, like quality assurance services, those types of things, wireless, telephony, alternative telecom, Ethernet, satellite.
So I'm a small, I want to make sure I understand you. So
Certainly.
I'm a small agency and I say, our servers are dying. We've got approval to buy more. How are we going to do this? And you say to them, guess what? We can help because we have an agreement with this hardware vendor that you can come into and buy your servers from this hardware vendor at this price that we've arranged, potentially. Am I getting that correctly, or am I missing something?
Co-Chair Steiner-Hayward, you are getting that correctly.
Okay, cool.
There's a slight difference between what would be offered today and mm-hmm. what would be offered under the new model.
Sure.
But yes, we currently today have 103 price agreements available. Of those, approximately 60-65% are available for state agencies and hundreds of local governments to come in and purchase from.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Nathanson.
Oh, Senator Johnson. So two things. A certain percentage are available for state agencies and local governments. What about the remainder? Did you say 65% or?
I did. Co-Chair Steiner-Hayward, Representative Nathanson. We currently, the portfolio of price agreements today are not all available for statewide use. Some of the price agreements that we have on the books today, for a variety of reasons, were created for either only DAS-only use, where agencies would have to come through DAS to get to the price agreement, or for some other, you know, reason, it was limited on who could use it. The model going forward would be that the majority of the vast majority of the price agreements would be available for use by all state agencies and these hundreds of local governments that come to us for service.
Okay. And one follow-up, please.
Certainly.
In the past, every once in a while, I hear a story that I've never tried to confirm. It's usually someone different each time saying, well, if you've ever seen what we have to pay for a computer, like a desktop or a laptop, going through DAS, I could do a lot better if I just went to Costco or went to Staples. And so this makes me very concerned. Is it, maybe we're not comparing apples to apples, maybe it's not for the exact same thing, but what do we know about the use or the utilization rate? We use that in another committee.
Yep.
What do we know about the use of the price agreements? Are people actually using them or are they avoiding them?
Coacher Steiner Hayward, Representative Nathanson, people are using the price agreements. They're absolutely using the price agreements, and in fact, over 50% of the spend on the price agreements is from local governments who are not obligated, they are not required to use our price agreements, but they come and buy from them because they save them time in having to conduct their own solicitations, and they find them to have high value goods and services available.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
I guess mine is a question of document drafting and memorialization of these agreements. We've had, as a state, you know, problems with legal sufficiency of documentation. Who's drafting your agreements? Are we submitting ourselves to accept vendor agreements, or are we drafting them with the best interests of the state of Oregon in mind? Who's doing them? How do we know that we're not getting, oh, let's just say for the sake of conversation, time and material contracts versus any other kinds?
Certainly. Madam Co-Chair, Senator Johnson, we in DAS procurement, we are drafting the contracts and the solicitations. We are putting these agreements out for bid, and we are drafting the contracts in-house. We send them over to the Department of Justice for legal sufficiency review. And then once we get to the point in our process where we have the vendor that we intend to award to, we go through a process of negotiation to get the final terms and conditions negotiated.
Okay, follow up. If you're doing individual vendor negotiations, how does that result in equitable contracts? How is that a level playing field? If people are soliciting under certain terms and conditions and then they get a second bite at the apple through a subsequent negotiation with you all?
Can I interrupt 1 second? Unless anybody else in my committee is going to be offended, I'm going to allow you to dispense with the whole Madam Co-Chair or Senator whatever, because you're going to get a lot of questions. So why don't you just keep going? Let's save ourselves some time, unless anybody else on my committee is getting offended by it. So please.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, when we conduct a request for proposal, there is a portion in our request for proposal that identifies up front which terms and conditions will be available for negotiation and which ones will be fixed. So that sets the playing field at the beginning as to what things might be able to be negotiated later. So and usually it is things like refining the pricing maybe the insurance.
That's a pretty fundamental issue, though, refining the pricing. Is that renegotiating the price of the bid?
No. It is if it was awarded based on the price that they submitted during the proposal, but at the time of negotiation we are able to get it even lower than their awarded price, we would certainly take advantage of that and lock it in at the lower price.
I make no brief about getting a lower price. That's a mm-hmm. good deal. I'm just curious how often that happens versus the vendor negotiating us up.
We typically would not negotiate
okay.
up.
Great.
So when the model that we had done that if anyone on the committee is interested is at openrange.ok.gov, and that was openrange.ok.gov, all one word, and it was this mall that we instantiated in Oklahoma. And what it was for things like, there were many times when you negotiate with a vendor with what we call order in hand. So in Oklahoma, we had 32,000 endpoints. We would go to Microsoft and buy 32,000 licenses of Microsoft Office. The school districts, the municipalities, the counties would have a better price from our contract than they would from the WSCA contract because we had negotiated it with what's called order in hand or with an actual order in place that we were going to buy from them. Then when the Oklahoma School District came to buy Microsoft Office, they were adding on to our E-level license, and then they could get a better deal than they would normally, and they could even, in fact, it wasn't uncommon that Microsoft, as that increased with more and more folks, that they would lower the price. What we ended up doing eventually with the Microsoft contracts is merging our agreement with the state of Texas. So the Open Range Initiative is actually also with the DIR, the Department of Information Resources for the state of Texas, and now it represents almost a million points. You know, so that was a huge increase in our ability to drive the price down for the municipalities and counties and what have you.
Thank you.
Cool.
Very good. So I think I left off on discussing that we currently have 103 IT price agreements in our portfolio today. The next column over, this is the agency-specific work that DAS did on behalf of other agencies. So this means that we conducted 32 solicitations on behalf of other agencies for IT procurements and awarded 32 contracts. We also did 203 other contract actions on behalf of other agencies. The last column on this slide is it represents IT procurement work that was done under some sort of delegated authority from DAS, or also included in this bucket is the OHA IT procurements that were done under their independent authority at that time. So what this represents is that the 39 and 72, what that means is 39 agencies have some sort of delegated one-off project authority to conduct a procurement during that biennium without coming through DAS to conduct that procurement. The second bubble over there is tiered delegation. So DHS and ODOT currently have a tiered delegation from DAS up to $5 million to conduct procurements up to $5 million. And so during last biennium, those agencies executed 69 IT contracts and 250 other contract actions. Okay. Yep. This slide speaks to what we are trying to achieve, how we would realign if we were given the resources to enact this vision. The vision is to expand the portfolio of statewide price agreements to make those available to state agencies and local governments, and to basically double, if not more, what's available on statewide price agreement. What this will do is it will achieve consistency, efficiency, interoperability. State agencies and local governments will be ordering the same types of goods and services, and that in turn will be more efficient. What will also happen is it would reduce the number of one-off or ad hoc agency-specific procurements that we would be conducting. So we would do fewer of the one-offs, and we would be driving people more towards this portfolio of consistent price agreements. In order to do this work and to bring in the delegated ad hoc work that's been currently happening over the past biennium, DAS procurement would need to add some resources. We would dedicate two of those resources to helping build out that price agreement portfolio, and we would dedicate a couple of resources to bringing in the in-flight ad hoc agency-specific IT procurements. In addition, the state CIO's office is asking for two resources to do that front-end and back-end vendor management activity that we discussed earlier on in the presentation. So measuring, setting up those standards, setting up that technology framework for what will the standards be, measuring our current price agreements against those standards, and then helping define the requirements for what our office and procurement would go out and procure. And then also focusing on the back end, doing the vendor management on the back end.
All right. So this is a very busy slide, but one of the questions that had been posed was how prescriptive are we trying to be with the technology build? This is what we call a technology reference model, the things, the material you see on the left, are the and it breaks down services or products into categories. And so these categories, we would be articulating what service, what product fits the need, and then setting up constructing a price agreement a statewide price agreement that would facilitate the procurement of that service or that product without having to go through a one-off every time. So by doing this, we're setting up or we're encouraging a standard build across agencies. We have been very successful in doing this. I had been successful doing this previously across school districts with them moving towards a standard build with school districts and with municipalities and counties. It's not mandatory. They're not required to use it. That would be forced upon them. What we had found was we went from half or perhaps less of our IT contracts being used by municipalities, counties, and school districts to well over three-quarters of our purchases were coming from municipalities, counties, and school districts. We had grown it from 68 contracts in Oklahoma up to well over 300 contracts prior to our co-oping with the Department of Information Resources in Texas. There were a number of benefits that we were able to achieve this way and a number of things that were non-return on investment type things, being able to interoperate, being able to have agencies or organizations cooperatively work together on technology problems. The thing at the bottom, that triangle at the bottom, what we're trying to demonstrate or illustrate is that a lot of those enterprise utility services that the state procures, there's overlap to other groupings or municipalities, counties, school districts, what they would need as well. So network switching for the state is the same as network switching for a municipality or a county. To purchase off the same state price agreement would be beneficial to both. Same thing's true with using iPads, let's say. That would be one of those things that would be available to that's something that we use in the state. It's something that a price agreement that was a statewide price agreement would benefit school districts and what have you. So I don't want to belabor this, but really it's creating a catalog, providing a single point of reference for legacy, core, and leading technology services, aggregating power, purchasing power across the state, reducing application and infrastructure complexity, and deepening the IT resource pool that we have. So this kind of illustrates how we view this, how this would go. So we do the technology reference model gap analysis and defining our requirements of where we'd start building out what first, moving into market research in cooperation with procurement, and then developing our strategy, turning that then over to procurement for the competitive billing and the negotiating and contracting, and then implementing and managing would come back to the Office of the State CIO. So that's kind of the swim lane or the process flow that we envision with this. And a quick summary here, the landscape's changed fundamentally with cloud service offerings. One of the frightening tools that I had seen at Gartner was something you hook up to your firewall, and it can tell you what folks have already subscribed to and are running through on their own without your being aware of it. You know, so things like, the Dropbox or the I had one individual, a cloud service provider, come to us and asked to establish a contract with the state of Oregon, and had cited a couple of agencies that they were in, and we had no idea that they were doing business there, you know. And so this is happening with or without me, you know. This is happening with or without our leadership. So we'd like to try to get in front of it. Ad hoc and uncoordinated IT products fragment the business of the state, creating duplication and put the state at risk. They also really, for our municipalities, counties, and school districts, it has the same effect upon them, this fragmentation or federalization, if you like. Successful cloud deployment will require strategic partnerships and vendor management. Our new capacity will enable the development of an IT catalog of shared services, leveraging purchasing power of the state for the benefit of state agencies, partner jurisdictions, and school districts. So that's really all we have. Any questions?
Representative Nathanson, and then Representative Kahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just thought of this question because of a few very much unwanted text messages I've received on my personal phone. To what extent does the state help people purchase and secure their phones that may be synced up with state computers? I get text messages, which I thought I'm not supposed to get anyway, and I ignore them, but, you know, if one of them I actually asked my husband to follow up on yesterday, because I wouldn't even call the phone number back from this phone. Mm-hmm. And one of my debit cards had been compromised, and to call mm-hmm. their office mm-hmm. ASAP. Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me, well, I don't remember ever giving them my cell phone number. But I was loath to call back, and my husband called, and they asked, now, what was your credit card number? Your debit card number? So that was obvious. That was easy for someone who's pretty with it, you know, to realize that's a scam. But there are other times when I've gotten something on here where it says, you know, just press this link, and we're going to link you up to something. Well, who knows what it's going to put on the phone, but then some of these phones we're using to perhaps access our Outlook calendars or documents from work. We're trying to do work while we're sitting in a restaurant somewhere, and you're trying to be responsive to someone and reply to an email, and, oh, I'm going to look at this document. But does stuff ever get downloaded onto our phones? That for sure it's going to compromise the phone, but then does it leak its way up to state computers?
So the direct answer to your question is yes, ma'am. And one of the things that we had done in my previous life, we had the school superintendent would use her email from her in Oklahoma, from her state issued phone. And one of the things we insisted on was using what we call a sandbox. A good technology product was the one we did. There are other ones, AirWatch and some other ones that are available. But what it did is it firewalled. It kept that phone, that email, from being able to be read, from being able to be compromised by somebody else. That's not a build we have here. That's not a requirement we have here. And that's one of the reasons why we have some instances prior to that where not only would it compromise the information that you are receiving, there was an instance where an elected official had their phone compromised to where it sent out they could send an email out from that person, and they did, and it was a news story. So with we're talking about here with the standards and practices, security standards for things. Right now we have policies, but we're not prescriptive on our security tools. That's not something that we currently we leave those decisions to the agencies to determine right now. That's not we set a policy for how things should be managed, but we're not prescriptive in things like saying we need to select your phone needs to have a sandbox solution on it, a good technology or a AirWatch or something like this, you know, and give them a listing of options. Now, as per the technology reference model, security and a product we will be articulating one, and we will be offering multiple selections to folks. But as far as actually having them do that, that's not within the purview of this. That's out of the bounds of the authority that this is providing. This is just saying this is good practice. Mm-hmm. This is what we recommend. This is what we think you should put on your phones. But beyond that, we don't really have. We're not gonna. It's not a. What do we call those mandatory use contracts? Aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think that's the terminology.
It is the terminology.
Thank you, Representative Collins.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. What I used to be a school principal, mm-hmm. and so I'm thinking of the 197 school districts in the state of Oregon. And I don't think you can get 197 school districts in the state of Oregon to do anything and that's coordinated and happening all at the same time, much less read their emails about your products. Therefore, I think you're going to have a huge challenge, or how would you reach out to school districts? And the school district that I used to be a principal for 12 years ago already had a tech department of 4 or 5 people. Oh no, it might have been even more than that. It only had 5,000 students. It's a fairly small organization. But is this going to possibly save school districts some staffing in some ways, or will it just probably just kind of keep working the way districts are currently working?
So if I may tell you a story.
Please.
One of the things that we had standardized in the technology reference model was a school information system, or an SIS.
Right.
And we had articulated for small schools, Mass Tech, for medium schools, Pearson, and large schools, Power Schools, for their management of their data. The Mass Tech is actually a cloud-based service that's provided. And then from that, we would be able to write the interfaces to what we called the WAVE, which was the overall student information system mm-hmm. that Oklahoma mm-hmm. uses. And from it, we could get our longitudinal data on achievement, and we could take the burden of reporting off on the school districts instead of to the Department of Education. It could come out of the WAVE. We could have students transfer from district to district more, you know, and move their records and track teacher performance and track other things that helped.
Yes, that's helped been my dream that. For a long time. Yes.
And so and the way that we did that was the districts at the time were paying upwards of $25 to $30 a seat for each of yeah. these products. By unifying them and moving them towards one of these three products, we dropped that to $4 a seat. So we were able to significantly reduce the out-of-pocket cost for them. But the other thing that it did for us was when we had the tornado in Moore in 2013, May of 2013, it took out Moore ISD. It also took out Briar Hill Elementary and Towers Elementary. We had 22 people that died in those two buildings. When we set up the temporary, I say we, when Oklahoma Highway Patrol set up the temporary morgue, they had people that presented themselves who wanted to come, and we have people that we call that are called ghouls. They just want to come and look at things like that. So we were able, because every morning at 10 a.m., all the school districts report attendance of faculty, staff, and students to the State Department of Education. We were able to give them the listing of what students, faculty, and staff were at Briar Hill or at Towers as of 10 in the morning.
Wow.
And then as people came to present themselves, we would ask them who it was they what they were looking for, and either turn them away or let them into the morgue. And that was really how – those were the sheets that we were the ones – that information is what provided those sheets to OHP. There's no – value to that you can place. There's not a dollar figure that you can get on that. It's not something that, you know, you would design for. But by standardizing the technology, we were able to better integrate and interoperate and provide something that was not going to be possible when they lost their data center and more. You know, the ISD. So that's what we're trying to go towards, is encouraging them by doing this rather than necessarily picking winners and losers. But hopefully, as more of this, as the logic of this, as the value of this becomes realized, folks will come and use that and move towards that for us.
A comment, Madam Chair.
Please.
I mean, seriously, what you're talking about is really incredibly important for schools. What has been happening in the state of Oregon for a number of years, ever since we started having computers and data systems, different school districts have bought from different vendors. Well, and the platforms haven't intermeshed. Therefore, the Department of Education has, I don't know how many people, re-entering data that's already been put into a system so that the Department of Education can have just simple things, not the daily attendance by any means, but just, you know, how many students they have and by month. I mean, nothing near the sophistication you're talking to about. And seriously, as a school principal that used to work more hours than I was supposed to or should have, I mean, when a parent would call after 4:30 and the staff had all gone home and they would call and say, well, did Johnny get on the school bus? Well, first thing that I'd always do is look at the attendance. Was Johnny even in school that day, much less get on the bus? Yeah. And so to have some of these resources, no matter, I mean, this, and that's daily occurrences in schools. And so if these things, this would be an answer to many administrators and parents and teachers' prayers.
We hope so, ma'am. In Oklahoma, we were blessed with 455 school districts. So quite a few school districts, quite a few more than Oregon has. And so in order to get them, so integrating those different districts, those different communities into a comprehensive system was a high priority for the school district. And because, as you say, the time spent on entering and re-entering data and fixing errors and moving students and tracking performance, and then much less trying to figure out what kinds of interventions, learning interventions, are successful versus which
all
ones
those
are
things.
Not. All of those things are just impossible without better information, really, fundamentally better information. And this it made a big difference for us. Now, I'm not promising anything. I'm not saying this is going to be, you know, the silver bullet, but it is a start in that direction, and it's something that I think will help people a great deal.
Well, and Madam Chair, it will help. We have people writing bills about chronic absenteeism. We have bills right from the top, our governor, major emphasis on student graduation. Until we have something like this, these types of technology in our schools, then we'll make real progress. We'll really know what we have.
Understood. Thank you, Representative. Senator Johnson.
My difficulty in listening to this exchange, and I just kept thinking of that old axiom, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. Representative Comp was holding forth in Ways and Means the other day, and I was listening with great acuity because you and I have been here about the same time. And how many times have we heard about the Department of Education wanting these longitudinal studies so they could track kids over a continuum? And as all we do is throw money at them, and there never seems to be a work product. Then we want a computer product that will seamlessly transition kids through their K-12, community college, and higher ed. And we just throw more money at the Department of Ed, and we never see anything. And they come back and they ask again until there is a culture in this state that requires participation with the idea of garnering the kind of data that Representative former Principal Comp talks about. We're going to spend a lot of your time and a lot of public money just grinding around getting nowhere. And my concern is this sort of attitude in some of the agencies that they'll just wait you out until you're gone. And I've seen it played out over and over and over again. We have had no clarion call of leadership saying this is what's going to help our graduation rates. This is going to give us the data trove of information that we want to be able to track these kids and to actually help them. So there's a part of me that wants to stand up and cheer that you're here with your manifold skills and the people around you to drive this kind of opportunity, technological opportunity. But I despair when I see our Department of Education that's just as happy to keep adding repeating the same bad data into the system and not availing themselves of the opportunity to make systemic change. And beyond doing the technical stuff of proper vendor agreements, I'm just praying that you have sufficient leadership to drive some of these agencies that are resistant to the tools that you're able to provide out of DAS, that your leadership will maybe cower some of them into doing what they ought to do and quit coming back here and just asking us for more money session after session after session. Other than that, I have no strong opinion about it.
Thank you, Senator.
Well, I again, voluntary programs are difficult and voluntary participation is always a struggle. One of the things that Oregon is very much a pioneer state, and lots of pioneers out there, and so this is a countercultural thing. It is my hope that by offering a direction, offering leadership, that there will be voluntarily people pick it up and take it and run with it. Eventually it may take legislative leadership to address some of this. I can't say it won't, but before you get to that point, I think it's worth trying to structure something that brings people along in their own, hopefully their own, and more importantly, the quote Cicero, the interest of the state is the highest law. So,
well, you'll have the tools in the toolbox. We'll see what happens.
I think actually we are at a useful time just to wrap this up. But the reality is our budgets are going to look atrocious over the next decade or more, and if people think that there's going to be money to be had for things that they're supposed to have done already without doing it in ways that you, frankly, and your team recommend, there's going to be, at least from my perspective, somebody who expects to be here for a while doing a lot of budget stuff, absolutely no appetite for it. Mm-hmm. I don't have Senator Johnson's experience or Representative Combs' experience, but I'm learning fast, and I'm very pleased to hear this because I'm kind of tired of Oregon exceptionalism.
Thank you, ma'am.
So, any other questions for this panel? CFO, you don't have anything to say about this. LFO.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, let's say the fiscal office recommends that a net $3,268,432 other funds expenditure limitation increase, the continuation of 12 previously approved positions to the remainder of the biennium, and the establishment of 12 positions, 6.96 FTE, six of which would be established as limited duration, be included in a budget reconciliation bill during the 2016 legislative session. The specific adjustments to each of the program areas in the DAS budget are laid out in the LFO recommendation, so I won't read through those.
Thank you.
So, Madam Co-Chair, I would move LFO's recommendation as presented to us by Paul.
Thank you. Co-Chair Smith moves LFO's recommendation. Is there any further discussion of this issue? Is there any opposition to this issue? If not, so moved. Don't need a carrier?
Want to open the next one?
Yeah. I'm going to close the work session on Department of Administrative Services. Thank you all very much. And I'm going to open a work session on the Board of Accountancy fee ratification.
Madam Chairman of the Committee, I'll just introduce the item really quickly. I don't think we let the analysts know that there was a change in the agenda today.
Okay.
The Board of Accountancy is here to seek, is requesting a ratification of their fees that were approved during the interim between the last session. So, as you know, the law requires that when fees are adjusted and they weren't anticipated in the budget that was adopted, they have to come back for ratification.
Thank you. Mr. Pidione, you guys going to come up and talk to us?
Cool.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good.
Anything else you want to add to what Mr. Siebert just told us?
Oh, no, he did a great job.
Cool. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Gentlemen.
Go ahead, Scott. Co-Chair Steiner, Co-Chair Smith, my name is Scott Wright. I've been a CPA since 1982. I am currently a partner with the accounting firm Kernet Stokes in Eugene, Oregon. I am the chair of the State Board of Accountancy, and I have put a fair amount of time into serving of the profession. I've also been the past chair of the Oregon Society of CPAs. My purpose here today is to talk about the Bill 5702, which is the ratification of our fees. You have my written testimony, but I just want to give a little bit of color to that. In 2014, we did some modeling of what our revenues and what our cash positions were going to look like in light of what a stagnant licensee base, and that's where our fees come from, is our licensees. And our fees are our licensee fees set in statute and our rules at that point. And in light of increasing costs, we saw that somewhere down the line, we were going to be in really deep trouble, that we were going to have a less than adequate fund balance at that point. So we started negotiations with our stakeholders, the Oregon Society of CPAs and the Oregon Association of Independent Accountants. And at that time, I was the treasurer of the board at that point. So we worked up some proposals, sat down with our stakeholders, and came up then with a solution that included the Senate Bill 581 that increased the fees that are in statute, along with then some fees that were going to be included by rule. And that was a negotiated position, the starting point were some higher fees that were going to be in statute, and that was traded off for some fees that were going to come in by rule. So we worked hard with our stakeholders. We came up with a resolution, and it was successful at that point. So the purpose today, again, is to say that this is, from the Board of Accountancy's perspective, is important. We have projected out for as far as 8 years what this might look to us at this point. And we do believe that this is important to have the ratification of these fees and rule to support then that which was added in the statutory side to maintain a good Board of Accountancy to provide public to the service to the public.
Thank you. Mr. Beale, anything to add?
So, Co-Chair Senator Steiner Hayward, Co-Chair Representative Smith, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Martin Pitioni. I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Accountancy. I just want to very briefly add, for the purpose of the public record, that in that phase two of that negotiated outcome, which was the rulemaking that the board finalized on October 1, and that's now actually before you for ratification purposes in Section 3 of Senate Bill 5702, that when we went through that rulemaking and got comments back, that consensus was reflected. So we have, just to give you a little bit of a set of numbers ideas, we have 8,000 individual licensees. We have 1,000 public accounting firms that the board regulates in approximate numbers. Everybody gets notified during this rulemaking stuff. We had, at the most, 6 or 7 comments on the negative side when we got into rulemaking. So don't think that this is somehow we had pitchforks arriving at the board office. It was nice and quiet. The work that we had done since 2014 with our stakeholders really paid off. And the rule piece, just in terms of the number size, we were very clear and put on the record when we were before you in under the OSCPA requested fee bill in the 2015 session, that was really the biggest lift, also in terms of the revenue impact and size. And the rule piece that's before you today is the much smaller component, but it is all part of that same negotiated package that we sat down with our stakeholders in 2014. That's all I wanted to put on the public record, and primarily want to offer myself as a resource for questions from the committee.
Senator Johnson.
In those handful of negative comments, was there any kind of a recurring theme?
I think the primary, Co-chair, sorry.
Oh, good. Just keep
Senator
going.
Johnson, really the primary recurring theme is the one that we expected, because it had been a really long time since we had a broad-based fee increase. The primary comment was, whoa, that's a big jump, which is exactly accurate. It was a big jump because the last time the profession really went through a really broad set of fee increases was the year 2000. That was the broadest theme, and it was accurate.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Quick question.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Let's go back to the calendar really quick. When was the last time there was a broad fee increase?
About the smaller fees have increased a little bit over time, but really the last time when you look at the primary revenue source of the board, which is the renewal fees, which is what we dealt with in Senate Bill 581, the last big jump occurred back in the year 2000.
Wow. Because I guess I recall you folks being here just a few years back, but I think I've been here so long.
Representative Smith, if you need any consolation, I had the same moment of deja vu.
Okay.
There was a $10 small increase in one of the bills. It was a little bit prior to my time. I think it was somewhere around 4 years ago, roughly. It was a little bit before my time with the board. There was a $10 increase in the renewal fee from $150 to $160. Uh-huh. That's for the individual licensure. That was clearly not a massive fee increase. So the last time, if you really go back and look at really substantial fee increase, that's when you have to go back to the year 2000 and say, okay, that's when it jumped from, I think it was $100 to $150 at that point.
I'm going to follow up just really quick.
Sure.
And I apologize because you stated this, but I just want to make sure I'm really clear. So industry's good with this. You got a few mumblings, but industry's good.
Yes.
I'm looking behind you.
I knew you would.
All right. Thank you.
Cool. Anything else? Okay.
All right. Madam Chair, I might add one interesting with the fees this year, with it being a short session, all of the fees, we've compressed them into Senate Bill 5702. So there's no particular bill that is assigned to one agency's fees. They're all accumulated in there, but we're having them come individually to the subcommittees in order to get approval. And then once the subcommittees have made a determination on those, then they'll all go to full committee, all contained in Senate Bill 5702.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
Okay.
Good.
You want to help me with the motion?
The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends approval of these fees as part of the 2016 fee ratification bill, which is Senate Bill 5702.
Perfect. So, Madam Co-Chair, I would move LFO's recommendation as just presented to us.
Lovely. Thank you very much. Co-Chair Smith moves LFO's recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Is there any opposition? If not, so moved. Thank you very much. And I gather we don't need a carrier because this is going in this big deal. Okay, I'm going to close the work session on the Board of Accounts. Any other business before the committee today? Thank you all for your attention, attendance, and questions. Representative Collins.
Are we meeting both days next week, or what do we anticipate?
I don't know yet.
Okay.
I don't know yet. My guess is yes, Representative, because my understanding is we're going to start to see some policy bills. But
okay.
We will keep the committee apprised as soon as we know more.
Well, it's such, short sessions just moving by so quickly. I just don't want to be caught unaware.
I don't know about you, but I feel like I've been here about 6 months already.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Full days next week.
Full days next week? Both days next week.
Okay.
Our wonderful scheduler, Mr. Borden, is keeping us on target. Okay. We are adjourned. Thank you.